Good afternoon, members. I'd like to call to order our Transportation and Transit Policy and Oversight Division meeting. For today, February 25th, 2009, we have three bills on the agenda, and we don't have a quorum yet, so hopefully we'll the stragglers will come in shortly, because I'd like to get these bills heard and moved along. So our first bill today is House File 570, Representative Champion. And I do appreciate all of you that have come on time, and the others will be getting a memo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee look at House File 570, and I would love to proceed.
Okay, I think the motion then will be that you're recommending this bill to pass and will be re-referred to the Public Safety Policy Committee, I believe, is the
absolutely
motion on the table here. So you can proceed and welcome to your own committee.
Well, thank you so very much, Mr. Chair and committee. This is an opportunity for you to do another great thing today.
Can you talk louder, or in the microphone?
I'm talking in the microphone. I feel like, you know, when I've been down this way, I'm not sure. Well, first of all, Mr. Chair and committee, this is a great time for you to continue your great work of doing a wonderful thing by supporting House File number 570. You know, they often say that pictures are worth 1,000 words. So you can look in your packet, and you have some pictures. These pictures really captures the challenges MnDOT faces on a daily basis when it comes to rest stop areas and the dumping of things that's not supposed to be there. As you can see on page one of the pictures, this is the Veterans Scenic Outlook rest area, and you can see in picture one that there are doors, and those are residential doors. And then there's lots of trash and debris. So MnDOT has proposed and wants, as an agency bill, for us to prohibit individuals from doing certain activities at a rest stop. And so if you look at House File number 570, it really talks about prohibited activities. Now, some of you, and we will go through this in detail or as much detail as necessary, some may be asking the question, well, isn't this prohibited already? And in fact, there's a lack of clarity on this topic, and therefore that's why this particular bill will provide the clarity that's needed so appropriate law enforcement can occur, and we can go from there. So I'm going to allow Mr. Robert Williams from MnDOT to talk a little about the bill and answer any questions that you might have.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Williams, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my name is Robert Williams. I'm the rest of the program manager for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And I'm here today just asking your consideration and action for legislation that would allow basically law enforcement officers to cite individuals where at rest areas if they were littering, dumping commercial or household garbage, dumping sanitary waste, consuming alcohol, or using the rest areas for purposes other than what they were intended. While many of these activities are prohibited already on the roadways, it's unclear, the current laws aren't really clear as to whether they're illegal at a rest area. So this legislation should clarify that.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Are there any questions of either Representative Champion or Mr. Williams? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifier, we have a health research bill summary. This bill prohibits certain acts or rest stops. The acts include failure to dispose of travel-related trash. I mean, like you're in your car and you drink your Diet Blue and your Doritos and your beef jerky, and you go, I don't understand that part.
You're supposed to dispose of it in the designated receptacles of the rest area.
Oh. Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, I want you to know that I'm supporting this bill simply because I want to say that I support a bill that Representative Horstman's on.
That's noted for the record. Are there any other questions or comments, Representative Holberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, Mr. Chair. These pictures, are some of them, particularly on the second page, are they because of animals, or do you think humans did this?
We actually had this happen at several of our rest areas that are our Class 2 rest areas, where I guess we're not witnessing whether that littering was caused by an animal or human. But the custodians, we actually surveyed our custodians on site, and 69 of them had witnessed individuals dumping household garbage and commercial garbage at their rest areas.
John, I guess, Mr. Chair, my point is I don't know what kind of, you can't tell what kind of trash containers were back behind the wall here, but I mean, I would assume we're trying to have trash containers that are in some areas of state bear proof or raccoon proof or whatever. Maybe that's contributing to the problem as well. I'm not sure I'm trying to get some information from you about that.
Yeah, in that particular rest area, we don't have the committee member. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Williams.
I'm sorry. At that particular rest area, at most of our seasonal two rest areas, our Class 2 rest areas are seasonal, and we don't have the dumpsters or the garbage cans available like we do at our Class 1. So this is just garbage that was left there. But I don't know if it was all strewn about by animals or humans.
May I?
Representative Champion.
Representative, perhaps... we can frame it this way. There is a difference between litter or packing of the rest area by an individual or if it's done by animals. From all accounts, it's our understanding that the litter that we're talking about and the problem that we see or MnDOT sees at the rest areas is done by human beings. And lastly, the only way a person could be cited for this before any violation is if they are actually seen or it's witnessed that they, in fact, are doing something that is prohibited by this particular statute or any law for that matter. So I hope that clears up that notion, and I would hope that you would support this bill going forward.
Then just for the record, we don't define household or commercial trash. What's your legislative intent around that?
And Representative,
yes.
Our legislative intent is to make sure that only rest area or travel related things are placed in the receptacles in a way that isn't causing MnDOT or the state agency added work and therefore added cost. So when I look at it, I would just think about, you know, Doritos and anything from fast food restaurants, but it wouldn't include a residential door from a house. You know, so those things go are so obvious and go outside of the bounds of what you would believe that one would dump into any rest area. I understand that rest is one notion, then we can say that the door is resting in the reciprocal, but that isn't the intent.
All right, thank you.
Very good. Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, you kind of caught my interest here a little bit when you said that the person actually has to be caught before they could have charges brought against them. We're not going to put, like, cameras out front or anything, are we? Like, would they want to do it all the intersections of the state so they can just mail you your ticket?
Yeah. Mr. Chair,
Representative Champion,
Representative, that's not the intent at this particular time. And when I say at this particular time, I can't foresee what someone thinks about later. I'm saying right now that isn't the aim or aspiration.
Mr. Chairman, it's not in the bill then.
Representative Davis.
No, it's not in the bill.
Okay. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief question to MnDOT. I was wondering if you have recycling receptacles at the rest stops.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, and team member. Yes, we have recycle receptacles at our Class 1 rest areas that collect aluminum, plastic, and glass.
Thank you.
Representative Mason.
I know a question was already asked about point one, but I keep reading it is unlawful at rest areas to fail to dispose of. I mean, that sentence I just find really confusing to understand.
Mr. Williams, Representative Champion. Could you repeat the citation, Representative Nation?
Okay, what is the, the way I'm reading, it is unlawful at rest areas, too.
The very first sentence.
Fail to dispose of travel-related trash and rubbish, either by removal from the site or by depositing it in the designated container.
Mr. Williams, or Representative Champion.
Representative, the language and the intent of that subdivision, or that particular prong, for lack of a better word, is simply to also suggest that if someone has trash, and it might be a travel-related trash, but if they just dump it on the ground without placing it in the receptacle, then that would be a prohibited act, and therefore that person could be cited for a petty misdemeanor.
But my question,
Representative Mason.
But my point is, I've read that several times.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never be able to. It's hard to get what you're saying out of that sentence.
Well, perhaps if we remove the word fail to, and just it is unlawful at a rest area to dispose of travel-related trash, is that where the confusion is?
Well,
I'm not sure.
Well, you're saying by removal from the site. I mean, if they're taking something off their garbage off the site, you care.
Mr.
Williams.
Yeah, basically it's saying either you fail to dispose of it into a receptacle or you carry it off-site with you. So if you buy a candy bar at a vending machine, that you're either responsible for depositing it into the trash receptacle or carrying it on with you to your next destination.
And if you fail to do so, then therefore you are in violation.
Okay, and as I said, I understand what you're telling me.
Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair. I understand what you're saying. Normally, I don't think most people are going to understand this. So I would suggest rephrasing that somehow.
I'm going to just have a little quick phone a friend here. Mr. Burris, if he has any perspective on this, I just want to clarify any confusion. Question about the rubbish.
Mr. Chair and members, I think the point being raised is on clarity of that first clause, and that's because it's the whole section is set up as a set of prohibitions, so it's a series of acts that you can't do. And what that first clause is really trying to establish is there are two ways in which you can do an act. That might be where the tension is coming out there.
Okay. Thank you for that. I hope that's helpful. Representative Wales.
As an English teacher, Mr. Chair.
Always helps as the AP English teacher.
We try to teach our young people how to communicate without double negatives, and I think that would help a lot in this situation.
Well, thank you for that. Representative Welty, you're getting a lot of interest in the rest area.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Champion, I'm just wondering if it would make more sense just to say that it is unlawful at rest area 2, and then number 1, fail to dispose of travel-related trash in designated containers. And you take out all of the rest of the words. I mean, essentially, I think your point is put it in the proper container. Otherwise, you're littering, and then you're. Yeah.
Representative Champion.
I think that's a great friendly amendment.
Yeah, I know Representative Pawlowski would be just very upset with this, but if Representative Wharton, we'll have a very quick oral amendment to correct this, but Representative Hortman.
Well, Mr. Chair, then that makes it where you have to throw away your garbage. You can't take it away. And so what I would suggest is that rather than a committee trying to draft a sentence, that we help our friend, Representative Champion, to move his bill to the floor, and he can work on a technical amendment that he works out with the research staff and the revisor so that we're not making it unlawful to carry away your trash to your next stop.
Representative Champion, what would you like to do in this situation? I think Representative Hortman is giving good advice, but it's ultimately up to you as the author how you'd like to proceed.
She's wise beyond the years, Mr. Chair, and so I would be happy to get this bill moved on, and we could do a technical amendment later.
Members, but actually, thank you, Representative Champion. And actually, members, that technical amendment would not have to go on the floor because this is going to public safety policy. So I think we have Representative Champion's commitment to address Representative Mason, Representative Swales' concerns here, and I believe we are prepared to vote if there are no other questions. And Representative Welty's concerns as well. Okay, members, Representative Champion renews his motion that House File 570 pass, recommend to pass and be referred to the Public Safety Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion prevails. And thank you very much, Mr. Williams and Representative Champion. And this bill is headed to public safety. Do you want to have a word with Representative Champion prior to that? Okay, we are now on our second bill. Representative Rukavina is here, House File 464. And I will move this bill, Representative Rukavina, and the motion will be that the House File 464 is recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. So you're going straight to the floor with this. And welcome to our committee. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be in front of your committee. I normally do this by amendments on all the floors.
Yes, he waits for the omnibus transportation
chair,
policy,
you know,
bill.
And, you know, Mr. Chair, I was hoping the amendment would be to, you know, be recommended to pass and placed in the omnibus transportation policy bill. Maybe that can happen, too.
Right, well, we'll see. We are not quite sure.
Hopefully it will pass. Members, what the bill does is allows, I think what's been at least looking around the table, a few of you are my age, even a little older, Representative Leader. And, you know, there always was the ability, and when we were taught at driver's training on a two-lane highway when you're passing a car, that you speed up and get around it and you pull in. Well, recently I've had complaints from a number of constituents, and actually I got the speeding ticket myself for doing exactly what we've been taught to do years ago. So to me, you know, especially in these trying times, financially, I don't need my constituents, and you don't need yours getting $125 speeding tickets for basically doing what we were taught younger to do for safety reasons. And you probably, I don't think I have the troopers on my side, nor the Department of Transportation, but I'm sure there are other bills that they oppose, like the Dimmler Amendments, which have been very popular with the public. And, you know, my contention is that it's safer to do that. You know, if there's anyone in this room that approaches a car going 53 on a two-lane highway and doesn't speed up and go a little over 55 to pass it, please raise your hand. Tell me. Yeah, right. Heard all, you're just a politician. Anyway, you know, I mean, we all do it, I think even the troopers, and I'll say this right in front of the major up there, that the troopers normally do give you some leeway. I don't think they would bother, but I've got, you know, local police officers and sheriffs up in St. Louis County that evidently must be being trained by the Post Board or something in a different manner of applying common sense. So that's my bill. I think it's safe to do that, I guess that's all I have to say on the bill.
Okay. Members, some questions for the author, and then we probably will want to hear from the Department of Public Safety. Members, Representative Rukavina is just, they're in stunned disbelief. So we have no questions of the author. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify either for or against House File 464?
Mr. Chair, if I do get a ticket on the way home tonight, you know it's retaliation.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Sue Gross, and I work for the Minnesota DOT, and I'm the state traffic engineer. And although I don't like coming to debate these types of things. That's my, part of my job. So I'm here today to tell you what we think about this bill. As I'm sure you're aware, traffic safety is near and dear to the Minnesota Department of Transportation and public safety. And I'm sure you've all heard of our Towards Zero Death program and the fact that we are working vehemently hard to try to reduce fatal and life-changing crashes on our freeway system. And we know that speeding is a factor in many crashes. In fact, speed is cited as a contributing factor in over 28% of fatal crashes that we have on our system. And although only 7% of all crashes are head-on collisions, about 20% of fatal crashes on two-lane roads are fatal crashes. And so many of those crashes that happen on our two-lane roads are related to these passing maneuvers. And so, of course, we don't want to do anything to make what I would consider it a worse situation. The other factor is on our two-lane roads are probably our least safe roads in the state. They have among the highest crash and severity rates of any other category of road in our state. So it's our belief that increasing the speed limit when passing and making that a law, to me, would encourage what I would consider aggressive driving. And that's contrary to what our safety program is trying to achieve. So that's kind of the reasoning behind why I don't think this is a good idea, or our department doesn't think it's a good idea. There is one other caveat that goes with setting no passing zones. And no passing zones are based in part on speed limits. And so in general, for every 5 miles per hour that you increase the speed limit, you actually do add to the length of a no passing zone. And so in this case, you know, if you had a double yellow line and you were going to allow somebody to drive 10 miles per hour over, you would need to increase that no passing zone by 200 feet, or 400 total, 200 on either end of that no passing zone. And so that would require MnDOT to actually go out and look at these no passing zones, of which on the state highway there's about 10,000 no passing zones. And we would have to evaluate whether signs would need to be changed and or pavement markings extended to accommodate that change. And I just want to point out, it's counterintuitive to people because you think that you're driving faster, you get around that vehicle quicker, so then it would be safer. But what no passing zones are based on, and I do believe the public follows, you know, looks at those carefully when they're making decisions about when it's safe to pass and not to pass, you're actually increasing the speed that you're going towards the oncoming traffic, which means your stopping sight distances are greater at a higher speed. And so if you had two cars that were coming opposite each other and both were trying to pass, I mean, it's going to change things. And it would be, you know, it's our responsibility. We would have to evaluate that and make sure that they were still okay based on this new speed limit. So that's our reasoning, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just curious about this passing zone issue. I'm sure that there are some assumptions made about driver behavior when you determine the length of your no passing zones or passing zones. And so are you saying that MnDOT's making the assumption that when they've done the current striping for no passing, that they're assuming that the drivers are passing within the speed limit?
We actually have, you know, there's an element of safety there. And so you know, we don't assume it's exactly 55 miles per hour. There is some give and take there, but there's, you know, different charts that you look at. And when you reach a threshold, when we're talking about going from 55 to 65, that's a huge jump. As you know, we did increase the speed limit on about 900 miles of our two-lane, two-way roads a couple years ago. And that was going from 55 to 60 miles per hour. When we did that, we actually did have our traffic engineering staff validate the no passing zones to ensure that they still were valid with that little bit of a higher speed limit. And because it was only 5 miles an hour, none of the signs actually changed. But on those roads now where we would be, essentially because the bill is 55 or over, we would actually be then geared up to the 15 miles from where it was originally calculated at. So, I would think we would need to go out and take a look at them. I mean, that would be, and I'm saying that's the reason, I mean, that's not my focus. My focus is, I'm looking at it from a safety standpoint, but that would be what we would do. And it would be our responsibility to do that.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I guess it's really confusing to me because I think the current law is that you're supposed to pass within the posted speed limit. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I don't know that that is typical of driving behavior. I am guessing that most people, when they go to pass somebody, they accelerate beyond, which is the posted speed limit, and try and make that that pass, if you will, or movement as quick as possible in order to, because the greatest risk, of course, is when you're out in the oncoming traffic lane and you want to get around and over as quickly as possible. So I guess it concerns me to hear that that you're not taking that into account in how you're striping this. And this law, I think, probably reflects pretty accurately what current behavior is out on the road. And if you're telling me that the roads are currently striped in a way that would not be safe to reflect what is likely current behavior right now, that concerns me.
I think we do have to make some assumptions and setting those, and it's probably there is an exact science to it, and we have allowed for the 55, looking at it, 55, we said, okay, well, people may be driving, slightly faster than that, but to jump from 55 to 70, I mean, I would reevaluate them. I mean, regardless of what's decided, I mean, as an engineer, I would reevaluate them, because we're talking about, people's lives here, and we would be at risk if we didn't do that. So I would that. But again, that's not my issue. My issue is the encouraging of what I would consider aggressive driving in our traffic safety program. So that's my position.
And Mr. Chair, if I might then, would you be more comfortable with the bill than if it was just 10 miles higher than the posted speed limit?
I think that's the same. Isn't that what it says?
Yes. Oh, Mr. Chair, I heard you talk about it being a 15 mile per hour difference.
We raised the speed limit to 60 on some of the 55 mile per hour roads a couple years ago. I'm sure some of you remember that. So there's about 1,000 miles out there that are already at 60 that we did not actually end up changing. Now we're talking about people going 70 miles per hour to pass on those roads again. So I'm thinking, in my mind, I'm thinking going on those 1,000 from 55 to 70, then those would be a particular concern and would probably be where I would start with my evaluation on those roads and then move to the ones that are 55 miles per hour now.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The author of the new and improved Dimler legislation, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure I'll be seeing you later, Ms. Gross. just a question. I'll make a statement, and it's kind of true or false. Is it true that most of the drivers in Minnesota are breaking the law when they pass on a two-lane highway?
Ms. Gross.
You're asking me that question. Most. I don't know. I assume so, but I don't know if it's 10 miles an hour or over.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, if you go over 55 miles an hour, technically you're breaking the law. So that would be a true statement then, that most people are breaking the law when they pass on a two-lane highway.
I don't have any data that would support one way or the other, but my gut, if you're asking for my gut feeling, I would say probably.
Representative Erdahl?
I'm not.
Okay. Representative Swell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Brooks, what I understand you to say is that if this evaluation of the 1,000 miles of roads that or the 1,000 places where it's posted right now at 60, there would be quite a fiscal impact to that, is that correct?
There could very well be, yes.
Okay.
And I'm not sure, I haven't seen the final fiscal note. It came a little bit there.
Yeah,
but we were thinking probably between, if you know, ballpark of $3 to $4 million to do the evaluation and actually move the funds.
Representative Swales, this is not in the packets, and I just learned about this just a few minutes ago. There is a draft preliminary fiscal note, which I believe is for $3 million. And actually, I wanted to ask the question, Representative Swales, can you give us at least a very brief briefing about what those costs would entail. Why is it $3 million? What are you spending it on?
Mr. Chair, thank you. You'd have to go out to the site, actually physically drive them. And oftentimes when we're doing these measurements, we use two vehicles to actually look, to physically see what site distances are. So there's that cost, and plus then to move a sign, you have to actually take a truck out, move it, drill the hole, and so there's labor and materials involved in moving of those signs. And there are 10,000 no passing zones on state trunk highways, and I am not sure how many are on county roads, but the county roads would also be affected by this. And I don't have a good sense for how many county roads and how many no passing zones are on county roads, but I would assume there'd be about the same number as state trunk highways.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wells.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess that if I'm going to break the law, I would feel a lot less guilty about it if I knew I wasn't charging the state $3 million. So I just would like to put that on record.
Okay. Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Gross, you may have convinced Representative Rukavina of your logic here, but you haven't convinced me. How can you possibly say that if you're going faster that you would need to expand the no passing zone? It makes no sense to me, because you get there quicker, you're done faster.
Okay.
Ms. Gross.
I'm going to call on Cassandra Isaacson, who's one of my traffic safety engineers. I'm going to let her try to explain it, because I've had to go over it a couple times, but I'll try it one more time, and then I'm going to ask her again. You're increasing your speed, okay, so you've got to take into account this traffic coming at you and the traffic and the speed that you're going. So your sight distance to stop is going to be raised. And in addition, so that means that it actually is lengthened versus, it's counterintuitive, and I do understand it's hard to understand. You kind of have to draw a picture and think about it, but maybe Cassandra has a better way. This is Cassandra Isaac, since she's an assistant state traffic engineer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, while she's coming up, it just doesn't make any sense, because if the car ahead of you, if the car ahead of you is maintaining the speed of 55 and you're going around faster, you're there quicker.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Ms. Isaacson, please welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the record.
My name is Cassandra Isaacson. I'm with MnDOT, Assistant State Traffic Engineer. And perhaps instead of thinking it that way, the way to think about it is at the end of the no-passing zone. So, there's a distance where we stop allowing you to pass. And beyond that, you can't, because there's a hazard, whether it's a curve or an object in the roadway. If you're going faster, you need more space before you get to that spot in order to stop, change lanes. So it's kind of, so we need bigger passing areas, but we may not physically have them, so therefore the passing zones might get smaller.
Mr. Chairman, a lot's changed in the 2 years since I've been gone. If the car ahead of you is going 55 and you're going 65, you need less time and less space to get around that car, unless he speeds up. And then you got your shotgun in the back of the truck, and, well, whatever. How can you say that?
Mr. Chairman.
If you're going fast, Mr. Chairman, if you're going faster, you get around quicker. in Fillmore County. I don't know.
I'm not implying that you don't get around quicker. What I'm saying, though, is that the physical constraints of the roadway. So at the end of that no-passing zone, pretend there's a dead cow laying in the roadway. If you're going 65 miles per hour, you need a greater distance in order to stop than if you're going 55 miles per hour. The amount of time could you travel a further distance in that space. And so we end the no-passing zone when we run out of visibility and all of those kinds of things. And so they would have to be evaluated. There's just no doubt about that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and to the witness, if there's a dead cow, you change the whole calculation. I mean, you're tying up the creek either way if you got a dead cow out there.
If you're going 45.
Maybe Representative Rukavina could explain that logic to me.
Representative
on how if you're going faster, how it takes more time to get around, so you need more space.
That's how it takes more time to stop.
Well, that cow will stop you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair and members.
And Chair and members. Rukavina.
Let me just say one thing first for Representative Wells and for everybody at the table, because there's only a couple people at the table that don't remember this, and that is that every single highway in the state of Minnesota prior to the oil embargo in 1974 was 65 during the day, 55 at night. Every one of these highways that we're talking about, you could go 65 miles an hour on, and most people still do, let's put it that way. So, and I remember when they got changed, and I memorized my highways, you know, because I'm a pretty good driver. I've driven truck and for a living and everything else. I don't, and maybe somebody does, remember that the Department of Transportation went out and moved any damn no passing signs or changed the yellow line when we went from 65 to 55. So if we go back to 65 for 30 seconds to get around the car, which a lot of people are doing, and the only reason I'm here is because everybody did it and nobody got a ticket, but now that we need money to run the court through fines and fees and run everything else through fines and fees instead of fair taxes, they're giving people tickets. So every highway here was 65 miles an hour. Nobody went out and moved any signs. Nobody went out and painted any new lines. They're all still there when it was 65. And the only time I can see your logic making any sense is if there's that big garbage truck coming at me, I'm going to speed up now and hit it because I can go 65. The only time you're going to be in a predicament is a dead cow or a car coming at you, which you shouldn't have passed, and most of us wouldn't in the first place. So I don't know where the logic is in this, but I've been here 23 years, and as former Representative Begich used to say, if DOT has something in color, you're screwed. They've already got you. But they don't have any color yet today, so there's still hope for this bill.
Okay, we have an expanding list of members.
Mr. Chairman, I rest my case.
Okay, Representative Davis, we have you again, coming around again the second time here. But I have Representative Leader, Erdahl, Hortman, Davis, and Houseman. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, there's a no passing and a passing sight distance, and normally the passing and no passing sight distance are always on curves or hills. And that's okay, I can understand that, but the problem I have a little more difficulty understanding is if you have a vehicle that's going 50 miles an hour and you want to pass them, go around them, the time to go around them at 55 miles an hour is longer than if you go, because that's a slower vehicle that you're passing, and that's the reason you're passing. Another reason is normally you're not going to run into the no passing or passing to no passing areas because an oncoming car you're not going to pass. And invariably you could get caught once in a while, but really the no passing and the passing zones are based on the height of the object of the car, 3.5 feet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the problem is we're only talking about the areas here that we're conflicting with would be in those no passing and passing no passing areas, which most of the road is straightaway where you're going to pass. And that's where the problem exists here. I think we're not concerned about, you're not going to pass in a no passing area. So that's why this bill would make sense, in my opinion.
Thank you, Chairman. I believe I was not here 23 or 30 years ago. Well, actually, I was, but I wasn't in our traffic office. But at the time that the speed limits did change, I would say that yes, the districts did go out and survey there are no passing zones and made adjustments. And many, you know, the issue of passing and no passing has been a big issue. So we've actually made a very concerted effort to make sure that our no passing zones are only where they're really needed. And so we have moved signs and actually tightened up some of that to make sure that it allows as much passing as possible. So again, the issue to me is not the moving of the signs. The issue is the encouraging of aggressive driving, and I guess that's what I'd like to say.
Okay, thank you. Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the fact is this, much of our discussion is academic. Changing the distance, changing signs, painting more lines or whatever, doesn't make any difference because the people are already doing it. I mean, people are already, you know, by our discussion earlier, breaking the law, passing, you know, at a higher speed limit, and they're doing it successfully without having a different distance.
My response?
You have to respond.
Okay, I don't have any more response. Okay. Just remember that 20% of our fatal crashes on two-lane roads are associated with head-on collisions or are head-on collisions. So the passing is an issue. And
but there's never at all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But it wouldn't change anything. I mean, I just don't believe that this would change it because it's already happening.
Mr. Chairman?
This is Rose.
And it's my opinion is that, again, that you're allowing people to make those decisions that I can speed here. To me, that's encouraging aggressive driving. And, again.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hortman?
Mr. Chair, I had a question about the fiscal issue. I know is not an issue for this committee. I'm just wondering if it's a fiscal note related to MnDOT or if it's a fiscal note related to the Department of Public Safety. It just seems like that whole conversation about how much it would cost, if it would cost anything, is a next committee conversation. I just don't know which next committee that is.
Representative Portman, I just was aware just literally, you know, 15 minutes after we, it's a MnDOT fiscal note, but I was just become recently aware that there is a fiscal note and, you know, probably need to send this to finance because of that, but we don't have to send this to any more policy committee.
And then just a question to the Department of Public, you're with the Department of Public Safety, right?
Transportation.
Oh, okay. Well, just on a whole issue that Representative David raised about he's talking about speed and time, but you were talking about stopping distance. Mm-hmm. Is the guideline that every 10 miles per hour you're going, you need about a car length to stop? Because in my driver's ed class, we were taught not to follow a car too closely. We were to give one car length for every 10 miles an hour that you're going. So if you're going 70, then the car in front of you is 7 car lengths. Nobody seems to follow this, and that seems to be a big safety problem, and that's why I'm asking.
Mr. Chairman, and yes, that is correct. The following distance is an issue, and there's been some research done on trying to educate people to stay further behind the car ahead of them. We tried an experiment on Trunk Highway 55, I don't know if you remember, a couple years ago with the dots, and it was effective in, you know, at least in the short term, to educating people that I need to be X number of car lengths behind the car in front of me.
Mr. Chair, just to follow
up. Representative Hortman.
Can a person get a ticket for following too closely?
Mr. Chairman, I think they can, but that would be a question to the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I don't remember your name, but basically I think where the confusion is for the committee,
right,
that they don't quite understand where your costs are coming from. And what happened is Representative Rucavina pointed out before, when we increased the speed limit or decreased it, you already had these curves marked, so technically you didn't have to shorten them. But now, because if you'd increase it, you'd have to lengthen it. There's no passing zone on the curve and hills, and that's where your costs come from, and that'd be an additional stripe, but striping on their yellow. But I presume normally the department don't go out and once the road is built, reevaluate the no passing and passing sight distance, because once you establish it, it's there. Couldn't you just about go standard, and you know what that sight distance is on your plan, and you could just go and stripe it basically there? The concern here apparently is cost, and you say $3 million. It appears that might it's probably a pretty good assumption, because of all that the traffic no passing zones you have. But that's really the only additional cost is to actually to lengthen those on each end of the curve of the hill.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
The cost is there's a couple things. One is you do have to go and actually physically look at the site because of things that may not show up on the plan, such as trees that have grown taller and that you can't see around and those types of things. So you do have to physically go to the site, so there's a cost associated with that. The cost of the stripe is fairly minimal, but you do have to get a crew out there to do it. And then the cost to move a sign, again, is you have to call Gopher State 1 you have to move the sign because you're moving the sign to match where the no passing zone starts. We have a sign on the left-hand shoulder, a warning sign that says, left-hand side of the road that says no passing zone at the beginning of each no passing zone. So you have to
Representative Leader.
Thank you. Normally, you aren't going to send a crew out because you got that on your plan, the speed limit on that curve. All you're going to have to do is extend the line and change the signs. You aren't going to have to send a crew out to go out and physically do it. You change that method. You did it initially when you built the road because you aren't changing the vertical curve or your horizontal curve. I can't believe, but anyhow, it's a moot point. But the concern is that it's a cost, and whether that cost is, I presume you're probably not too far off.
Okay, we have two more members that wanted to talk, and then I think I'd like to give Representative Riccovino the last word. Representative Davids again.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so the committee knows, I'm a former certified driver education teacher in Nebraska and Minnesota, and that's why I'm having trouble with this, because I actually know something about it. And I would argue that Representative Riccovino's bill should be named the Make Minnesota Roads Safer Act of 2009, because I think that you're making the road safer by allowing a person to get around in a quicker manner, more timely manner, and doing it legally, because everybody's doing it now anyways, to make it legal.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had to tell you this little small world story. And the reason I interrupted so rudely Representative Riccovino as he was introducing his bill, I was called out by constituents. It is University of Minnesota Day at the Capitol, and I was explaining to them that the higher ed chair is just now presenting a bill inside, and I was explaining to them the nature of the bill. And one of the students perked up and said, I was caught that way. I got a ticket that way. Would he like me to come testify? and here is the significant point to show what a safe driver he is. He said, it is the only blemish on my record.
Oh.
So at any rate, he was motivated to come in and offer his service, but Representative Riccovino kindly indicated that he thought he probably didn't need testifiers today.
You know, I think actually one final thing is, if they so choose, I do see the State Patrol in the room. If they would choose to testify, great. Otherwise, sounds like they are interested. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Michelle Tucker with the State Patrol. I have a cold, so you'll just have to kind of tolerate my squeaky voice. I, at all costs, try to avoid having to testify against anything that is at least somewhat tolerable. But the issue for us on this particular bill is it'll be difficult for us to enforce. What I see developing is it won't be long before people will realize that if I say that I was about to pass the car, or I had just finished passing the car, they'll get those additional 10 miles an hour over the limit. In other words, if we're clocking someone over behind that vehicle, and they're 10 over, I was just going to pass that car in front of me, and how will we know that that's not a valid argument? Or if we're coming at the vehicle and they're 10 over the speed limit, how will we not know that they hadn't just finished? So it does make the enforcement piece a little bit fuzzy for us. And I was pleased to hear Representative Luca Vina say that he hadn't noticed this issue with the patrol. We do try to teach our officers discretion. I do agree with the argument that it's important to get around the vehicle quickly and safely. So I understand what you're trying to accomplish. I just think there's some other fallout that can occur here by increasing that speed limit for 10 miles per hour over when you're passing that we can't really control with the language the way it is. To Gross' point, to who just testified, speed is the second leading cause of crashes in the state of Minnesota. And so even though the purpose of speeding to get around that vehicle quickly and safely has some purpose, it does have a tendency to, I think, expand the speeding of people on the other side of it. So that's our only position on this today.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you, this is your business, so you know driver behavior. What percentage of people passing on a 55 mile an hour speed road are passing at 55 miles an hour or less?
We don't have any statistics. I think what you need to factor is what is the speed of the vehicle they're passing. If someone's going 40, you could easily pass within the speed limit. Are they passing someone that's going 50? It's going to be a little harder to get around at 55. So, but we don't have any data.
And Mr. Chair, I'm not asking for data or statistics. I'm asking you as a professional out there on the road observing driving behavior, knowing what you know about drivers and how our roads function. I mean, and I'm not going to hold you to anything, but, I just don't. Just tell me if you think the majority of the drivers out there are passing at 55 miles an hour on 55 mile an hour roads.
It's been a number of years since I've worked the road. I worked the metro, but I would say my guess would be that the majority have to exceed 55 in most cases. But around that, just be a guess.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify either in favor or in opposition to House File 464? Representative Riccovina, do you have any additional comments?
Mr. Chair, I just think it is a safety issue, and I think it's much safer just to get around and get back in the lane. And I don't understand the engineering, the traffic engineers, mathematics or whatever, but I think it's much safer. And I want to reiterate one thing. Until 1964, 1939, these highways had 60 and 50. In 1939. So every highway out there basically has been designed at least 60 miles an hour. And then they were all 65 in 1963. And so, the engineering of the highways is Representative Leader knows because he's a county engineer that worked on roads. They're all, people were going 65 on them for many, many years. And so I think it's a safety issue because as you all know, speaking of aggressive driving, I think seeing it, when I drive the 15 miles I drive into the city of Virginia every day on a two-lane highway, it's when somebody's going 50 miles an hour and there's two cars and then three cars and then five cars and then eight cars behind them trying to get to work that the aggressive and unsafe situation starts to occur. So get around like we were taught. Who said it? Not Representative Welty. Representative Martin, I think. We were taught also to follow, one car length for every 10 miles an hour. So I'm not that old. But we were also taught to speed up and get around. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering whether it should come to the Finance Committee. I think we've aired the finances, and I don't know if we should take any more committee time. I was wondering, depends on what the vote is, if we could determine if it should go to finance or not. If it gets voted down, we're finished. And if it's a pretty much disputed vote, we could call it in as finance. But if it's going to be a majority vote, I don't know why we'd need it in finance.
Well,
that's maybe a foolish thing.
It's possible. I wasn't aware of the fiscal note. I'm sorry, Representative Riccovina. But, maybe we've hashed out the transportation issues, but it's possible that because there's a fiscal impact that maybe it should just go to bypass your committee and then go to Representative Carlson's committee because, they're going to probably want to
help. Chair, wait. Sure, maybe we can root it through.
Okay. Okay. Well, Representative Rukavina, I think that... one moment, please. Okay. Okay. Because this is trunk highway dollars, you don't have to go to Representative Carlson's committee, but we normally have trunk highway issues going to the Representative Leaders Committee, so I think I'll just have to revise my motion. Representative Leader, I'm deferring to your expertise and experience on this matter. Would you like to see it in your committee?
We can do that.
Okay. All right, members. So here we go. I'm going to...
Chair, how about the consent calendar?
We'll, I think I'll just have to modify the motion here that House File 464 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation, Finance, and Policy. That is the motion before us, members. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. And
thank you, ma'am.
We will, many of us will see you again. Representative Swale, you're in charge.
All right, members, we need to approve the minutes from February 18th. Thank you. Representative Davis moves the minutes from February 18th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? The motion carries. Representative Hornstein, would you like to move your bill, House File 928?
Oops.
The motion is that it be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Yes, Madam Chair, that will be the motion.
Right. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you.
Would you explain the bill, please?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is an agency initiative from the Metropolitan Council, and it deals with electronic devices at among transit operators. And I'll have Mr. Shetman from the Met Council go through the bill with you. But members, you may recall last year I authored a bill on text messaging while driving. And in the process of preparing that bill and arguing in its favor, I became very acutely aware of the increased amount of distraction on our roads. And you'll recall that we had an unfortunate, a very tragic example of texting while driving in California among a transit operator. This was a commuter rail situation outside of Los Angeles. And so we want to be proactive here. We have very safe drivers in Metro Transit. They're very, very skilled. But we want to be very proactive and send a message to both the public as well as transit operators that we're very, very concerned about the proliferation of electronic devices, and so that's the rationale for this bill. And I'll have Mr. Shetman explain the details.
Mr. Shetman.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair members. My name is Judge Shetman, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be before you and Representative Hornstein for carrying the bill. I have a handout that each of you should have here that describes the bill, and what we're looking for is to place the restrictions on the use of cell phones and other wireless communication devices for our transit operators while they are being operated by one of our drivers. Just so the committee knows, we currently have a policy that that restricts the use of cell phones and wireless devices. But as Representative Hornstein mentioned, last year there was a terrible accident out in California where an operator was texting and there were over 25 people killed and 120 people
injured, and since that point in time, APTA, which is our national public transportation, public transit organization, has been basically moving forward and seeking saying that transit operations should be seeking tighter rules and restrictions for people who are using those wireless devices. And since that time, the NCSL has stated that there's been over 30 states and 100 bills that have been introduced to do this exact purpose, and we're kind of following suit right there. It's a pretty straightforward bill. I will tell you that we have talked to the union, and Ms. Summers is here from the Amalgamated Transit Union, and they are they don't oppose the bill. There is one area that they would like to see some flexibility in, and we've mentioned that we work with them on that. That in the event that there was an emergency, that they could a family emergency or an emergency that they needed to outside of work, they would pull the bus over, put it neutral or stop, and make that call. And the council's willing to work on that. I mean, we're just trying to look out for the safety of the of our passengers and for our drivers. And I'd be happy to take questions.
Yes, we have two people on the list right now. So, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the witness, I've got two quick questions here. One is, you said the Met Council has already banned them. If you've already banned them, why would we be banning them again?
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, what we have is that it's, we've banned them as far as use. However, that just goes down as a violation, and it takes a number of violations within one calendar year before a driver can be terminated. They will have a something in their record over that year. I actually have a copy of the recommended practices for employee control devices while operating a vehicle on agency time, and then also our procedures that lay out how we deal with drivers who have that. So they're banned. However, the enforcement of that takes a number of incidents before we are able to move forward with termination. We have a fleet of professional drivers, and who we also believe should be expected to drive at a higher level than since they're carrying the public, that they have additional responsibility. So that ban, Representative David, is a council procedure. This bill would allow, if that occurred, that driver would actually be able to be would basically have a petty misdemeanor if found guilty of that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to the witness, I don't see. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't see any penalties in the bill.
Madam Chair and Representative Davis, I believe that Section 169.476 is the is where the petty misdemeanor language is found, and I will look to maybe Mr. Burris to help me out with that.
I was going to ask Mr. Burris to respond.
Madam Chair and members, the this provision is proposed to go into Section 169, which is the section on traffic regulations, and there is a provision that is in a separate section under current law that establishes a default penalty of a petty misdemeanor for all of the, for violations under Chapter 169.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the other question is, I can kind of almost see this one making some sense a little bit. But not that much. But my real concern about this is, okay, today it's the Met drivers. Tomorrow it's me and my E85 Suburban that they're trying to take away from me.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Shetton,
Representative David, I absolutely agree with you. The council is pursuing this as a standalone bill. We do not think that it is our responsibility to be telling other drivers or other commercial drivers how they are supposed to be behaving within their car. And that is why I have been asked numerous questions about does this apply to school bus drivers, does it apply to the opt-out bus providers? It doesn't. It applies to the council and the council-owned vehicles and the operations that the council provides. We basically agree with you.
Representative Davis?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Holder.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hornsteiner, Mr. Setman.
if this is so important for the safety of the transit riders in the Twin Cities, why don't you apply this to the other transit providers? I'm not talking buses, but I don't understand that dynamic at all.
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair, Representative Holbert, again, an excellent point. When the bill was being drafted, there was a very conscious decision to be made that is a decision to be made by the legislature and not for the council to be looking into who additionally may fall into this this realm. And I just think that would be bad form on the council.
Representative Holbert and Madam Chair, I don't see Ms. Munyon in the committee room. Have you had any discussions with her regarding this?
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Holbert, I have not, but I would be happy to have that conversation. Again, since the council and Metro Transit have been working with APTA, which the council participated in, I felt it would be probably best, and I think that there's a very good reason to think why you may want to expand this to other people. But one thing the council really has to make an effort to do is make sure we stick within our responsibilities and jurisdiction. And if other transit providers should be included, I would leave that up to the legislature to decide.
Representative Holbert?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hornstein, do you have any comments?
Well,
on that issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Holbert. I think it would be good policy to expand this, but you know, right now, this is something that the Met Council has discussed. It has been discussed with the union. They are in a position now to fully implement it. You know, let's see how it goes. I would certainly, I mean, you raise a valid point, and I certainly encourage conversations among the other transit providers to take a look at this legislation, and certainly we can, you know, come back next year and see how this is working, and, you know, if there are not a lot of problems with it, I certainly just envision expanding it.
Well, and Madam Chair, and this will go kind of to my bias, and will transfer to the cell phone use issue, but a number of years ago, I observed a Metro Transit bus driver working on a crossword puzzle. And he would stop at the red light, and he would pull out his crossword puzzle, and then the light would turn green, and he would sit and keep working on his puzzle a little bit. And then at some point, I suppose, when he figured out what the right answer was or whatever, would notice that the light turned green. And I observed this behavior working my way through downtown St. Paul, and in fact, I think reported it to Mr. Shetland with a bus number, and I think that action was taken as a result. I mean, that's just as dangerous and distracted as what, or even more so than what might be for use of a cell phone. And so, was there any thought about a distracted driving kind of standard? As opposed to just the use of a particular device.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Again, Representative Holbrook, a really good question. And I have been in conversations with Office of Traffic Safety about distracted driving in general, because what you're describing, I think it's a big problem among the broader population, electronic or not. And rather than just throwing out a set of policies here to the legislature, it's my intention to work with the Department of Public Safety over the next year. AAA is engaged in this conversation as well, and really come up with, I would hope, some consensus kind of legislation to really address and codify distracted driving issues in the state, electronic or not. And so it's possible that maybe through that process we can address the issue that you were just talking about. But it's a point well taken. But we have a lot of issues with distracted driving, from crossword puzzles to cell phones to eating. And it's really time that we take a look at that behavior and come up with some reasonable legislation to regulate it.
And Representative Hornstein, I'm going to support your bill. I can understand the constraints of that council not wanting to impose standards on the rest of the state. I don't think it makes sense as a public policy maker if we have transit providers in one region of state under one set of standards and different elsewhere, so hopefully there's some move to continuity across the state. But I do have some concerns that we're only addressing one behavior when we should, in fact, be addressing distracted driving in general.
Representative
Yeah, back to you, Representative Holberg. Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, and it's a point well taken. But members, keep in mind, you know, Metro Transit is the big kahuna in the state. This is the vast majority of transit riders are Metro Transit riders. And, you know, maybe we could look at this almost as a pilot and see how it works. And I imagine it'll be fine, and we can expand it to other operators, and I think it'll send a message to them as well. So hopefully they'll come forward just as the Met Council has done.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We have three more questioners. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this is either to Representative Hornstein or Mr. Shetland. Now, I apologize for tipping out to catch MnDOT at the very beginning, so you may have touched on part of this. I'm looking at lines 2.9 and 2.10. First, I think it's for Mr. Shetland. Now, my understanding is that Met Transit out drivers, et cetera, can't make non-work related calls now, can they?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, they cannot. We have a policy in place stating that they should not.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In part, I'm wondering if we have a policy, why do we also need a statute? But I think you talked about that at the outset, so I won't ask you to answer that. But I am concerned about, I think Representative Holberg is reminding me, about what the ubiquitous dial-a-ride that exists outside the Met Transit area. And I'm wondering, in part, about the discussion. I'm going to express some concern about if we did expand this beyond Met Transit in a future bill, Representative Hornstein, what that would mean for the dial-a-ride. Now, I understand the work-related part would be an exception, but not all the dial-a-rides, at least in my area, have employer-provided wireless communications. So I would want to take care, if we expanded this, to allow for dial-a-ride to continue and allow the drivers to be using their, sometimes they're using personal cell phones and are being reimbursed. I would want to make sure the dial-a-ride would be able to continue if we were to expand.
Would you like to respond to that one?
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, those are excellent points, and I think that if that were to be expanded, that is a very just conversation to have. I mean, I think that again, those are different circumstances with the kind of Greater Minnesota Transit and how they go about their business, but I think that they also use radios, and I'm by no means an expert on how they do that, but I think that that'd be a great conversation to have.
Representative Hornstein?
Madam Chair, Representative Moore, that is precisely why, you know, we want to keep this limited at this point, because there are questions like that that come up, and these agencies and organizations need to be consulted, and you need to have buy-in in order to move something like this in a serious way. So, point well taken, and, you know, if we do look at expanding this, that's something that ought to be considered.
All right. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Chair, how do you see this on the House floor? It gets to the House floor. How many amendments would you accept? Because I'm very, very concerned about this becoming a Christmas tree, because, you know, pretty soon you can't do that, then pretty soon you're not going to be able to play crossword puzzles, then I can't have my diet, do my Doritos and my beef jerky and eating a Big Mac while I'm driving down the road going 10 miles an hour faster than I'm supposed to and passing someone.
Representative Hornstein.
That being said, I guess the question is, how do you see this as far as a Christmas tree on the House floor?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Representative Davis. You know, things are going pretty smoothly right now in transportation policy. We had two very, very large controversial bills in one year, omnibus bills. Right now, we don't have, things are moving along. We're going to the floor. We're going to other committees. We don't, at this point, and things could change, obviously, if we get more bills, we don't have an omnibus bill at this juncture. And it would be great if we could just keep these bills as standalone bills for precisely the reason that you suggest. This is an agency initiative. We believe the legislature passes this. It'll be signed into law. It serves a very specific purpose. I, as the author, will really discourage amendments. But, you know, once things get on the House floor, you know, this could be a vehicle for the Dimler Amendment. I don't know. But but I will certainly discourage it, and we will discourage it, and we want House File 928 to pass as is.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. One final
questioner, unless there's other people who'd like to be put on the list, and that's Representative Welsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. Questions for you. And that I see this as, you know, an issue that probably would go along the lines of employee stipulations that you go through and an employee policy that you have in place. And so I'm wondering now that this is in statute and law enforcement is involved, if a bus driver gets pulled over because the bus driver is talking on the phone and gets a ticket, that's one issue. But what happens now if somebody calls in to Met Council and reports the driver who is on the phone? Is the Met Council going to turn that person in so that person gets a ticket? Or is that person just going to be subject to some other policy within the Met Council and just get a write-up?
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I'll take a quick shot at this, but I think Mr. Shetland's probably in a better position to answer it. I know that the Met Council has a, as Representative Holbert took advantage of, I think they do are aware that the public is watching and have a mechanism to, handle information and complaints. I think it would be a little bit tricky sort of to do the second hand, but I'll defer to Mr. Shetman to see how the Met Council would handle that type of situation once this becomes law.
Mr. Shetman?
Madam Chair, Representative, I just talked to Julie Johansson, who's our Deputy General Manager at Metro Transit, and that is not our intent to do that. We would not be going out and basically checking our drivers to make sure that they aren't on their cell phones, since we already have that policy in place. If there were an accident, we would expect that, or an infraction that a police officer noticed, then that would be taking care of that place. The council and Metro Transit Police would not be doing that. However, based on an investigation, if we found out outside of a traffic violation that then if the council observed that through basically a tape or somebody calling that infraction in, we could investigate it, and if it were found to have happened, then we would report that.
All right.
Madam Chair,
just a quick concluding
comment, if there are no other questions. I want to reiterate, and I've been taking the bus quite a bit this year, and I've had a chance to interact with the operators. We have very, very well-trained, skilled operators. And I want to make sure that people don't interpret this bill as, you know, some kind of needed legislation because somehow our operators are not skilled or making decisions that are in the best interest of passenger safety. That is absolutely not the case. But we want to reassure the public, and we want to send a message, and that's what this legislation does. So I would really ask for your support and appreciate the good the debate. Now, there's one other minor thing that we need to do before we vote, and Mr. Burris will explain this again with apologies to Representative Pulaski, but we have to do an oral amendment here, and
okay.
It involves one word. And so if Mr. Burris can explain it, we'll
Mr. Burris.
Take that up.
Madam Chair and members, there's an extra or. It's on page 2, line 18. This is in subdivision 3. There's a nested set of requirements, and there ended up being an extra or in the listings there.
Representative Hornstein, would you just like to incorporate that?
Basically, yes. Members, the motion would be on line 2.18 to delete the word or.
All right. Members, I guess I've been advising you to vote on that little conjunction. So all those in favor of that technical amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. The conjunctions have it. Okay. Oh, I get the gavel. Yay for conjunctions. Okay. So now, Representative Hornstein recommends to pass House File 928 as amended and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No.
No.
The motion carries.
It's slippery slope.
All right. Next meeting will be March 4th at 1 p.m. here in room 5. Meeting is adjourned.